You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I can almost guarantee you'll never look at the McDonald's Golden Arches quite the same way again after you see a new film called The Founder. In it, Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc, the man who transformed a small San Bernardino burger stand's concept into an empire with well over 35,000 locations around the world. It's the latest incredible performance by the actor following his star turns in Birdman and Spotlight. And John Lee Hancock of The Blind Side and Saving Mr. Banks fame directed it. I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
How much did either of you know about Ray Kroc before you began working on this movie?
Michael.
I
keep saying, I'm sorry, yes, you think you know. It's one of those things, you know, there are actual movies and books that I'm sure I've referenced. And then I think to myself, wait a minute, I've never actually seen that entire movie, you know. And so you knew that there was an association, and if someone would ask you, I would probably have said yes. And then I would stumble like that, probably say he started McDonald's, some vague thing like that. And then you realize, so when you get a script sent to you saying there's a movie, it's called The Founder, it's about Ray Kroc, and it's about McDonald's, you think, okay, well, I have no idea why someone would want to do that. And then I read it, and I thought, oh, this is pretty interesting. And then John's take on it was so interesting.
Well, John, you didn't write the script.
No, I didn't.
How early in this project did you come aboard?
It had predated me through the Combine and Film Nation by about 6 or 7 years, I believe, when they put it together. And Robert Siegel, who lives here in New York, wrote the script. And when I read it, I thought it was quite an unusual script, and that I had a strong rooting interest for Ray Kroc, and then started feeling a bit conflicted about it.
Well, he is a complicated character, which is probably was a lot of fun in playing him.
Yes, always. You know, that's interesting. He is and he isn't, in my opinion. He is probably in spite of himself, and because his life got complicated, and then he dealt with it and really handled it the way he chose to handle it, which was pretty complicated. But he was pretty direct, straightforward about what he did and what he saw and what he thought should happen with McDonald's.
Well, when we first see Ray Kroc in 1954 in this film, he's a struggling salesman of, at that point, multi-mixers, and he listens at night to motivational records. He's almost at retirement age. Is he the antithesis of what we think of as a potential billionaire? Was something else there?
I think especially given the fact that it was the 50s when all of his contemporaries were looking for a soft landing spot and time to retire, and he had still not rung the bell and was having some trouble and difficulty selling these mixers.
Now, they're the mixers that are used to make malts, so they would have been ideal from McDonald's, but there was only one McDonald's at that time.
Well, in reality, there was the main one in San Bernardino. They had attempted a franchise effort a few years before, so there were, I believe, four additional ones, but that was the main one.
Michael, how do you approach playing someone like Ray Kroc? Could you watch any footage of him?
Yeah, there was a little footage of him. Not a lot, surprisingly. Or maybe there was, and I just didn't happen to see that. But you learn a lot. I do anyway by just watching somebody physically, just the way he moved and the way he spoke and obviously what he wore. But, you know, I keep saying there are pros, the major pro being you have what I call answers to most of the tests. You know, there you have information on the person. And so a lot of your backstory is done for you. And then the disadvantage, if there is one, is that you don't have the advantage or the ability to just create your backstory, create a person, you know. So I guess you could call that a limitation.
Because you are playing a real
yes.
person,
mm-hmm.
and you can take some liberties, but he certainly got a lot of people to follow him. Do you think of him as kind of charismatic?
Oh, very charismatic, I think. And he... John and I talk about this all the time. I'm speaking for him because I know how he feels about this. You know, up to a point, I admire Ray Kroc a lot. Hard worker, bootstrap story, you know, pulled himself up by his bootstraps, worked hard and had determination and you know, little things. And then he, you know, goes south. And
well, he does some awful things.
Yes, he's very unscrupulous, and there are certain parallels he could draw to today's situation. Let's put it mildly. And, you know, I keep forgetting about this thing that one of the things I really admire him about, that people sometimes make fun of, and I'm sure in those days that was probably considered a weakness, and that is the idea of him listening to motivational records, a motivational speaker speaking on a phonograph. I think it's extremely admirable. Honestly, I do. I think people who say all he wanted to do was improve himself and he wanted to succeed, and I found that, I don't know if touching is too obnoxious a word, I guess, to use for Ray Kroc, but I admired it, actually.
We can never quite know what's going on in his head. At those moments, did you have to decide what he was thinking?
Well,
even though it's not in
yes
the script?
And no, and I'm not just saying that's because he's here. John was always supplying me with more information than I had, and I probably got a little lazy because if I didn't know something about the story or Ray, John had tons of information. So I had my information, and John and actually Robert and everyone around you would kind of feed you info. So, and also I got to say that really what made this interesting one of the things that made it interesting just from an acting point of view was really what I was portraying was a mindset, really, about America and capitalism and the free enterprise system. So that's really what I was playing. Like in Birdman, actually I was playing Alejandro, and Alejandro will tell you I was playing Alejandro. Mm-hmm. I was just the vessel, you know.
For the writer-director?
Yes, Birdman, yeah.
My guests are Michael Keaton, who stars as Ray Kroc in a film called The Founder, and John Lee Hancock, who directed the film. John, how helpful was his autobiography, grinding it out?
I found it to be very helpful because we read a lot of different stuff about McDonald's, but to hear him in his own words talk about some of the stickier situations that were portrayed in the movie and how he kind of glossed over them a bit and chose not to talk too much about, for instance, his life with Ethel, his first wife, or his daughter, or other things like that, with his McDonald's brothers or Raleigh Miller, just kind of went right by him. And on the one hand, you go, well, that's convenient for him to do that because he didn't have to open himself up to it. But on the other hand, I think he also was kind of taking the high road a little bit, kind of like, well, you know, say what you want about that, but Ethel and I grew apart or whatever.
Well, part of the fun here, of course, is that there are so many different conflicts going on, both within his marriage, with the McDonald brothers, and with the business world in general. He was a Midwesterner like you, Michael, a Pittsburgh native. Is it easy for you to slip into his skin in that way?
Probably. I'm a Pittsburgh native, I think. The audience might think
he wasn't from Pittsburgh?
No, he was from Illinois. And Pittsburgh's an interesting spot. It's the only place in the world where it's kind of the Midwest, but it's not quite. It's right between the East Coast and what's really the Midwest, and that makes Pittsburgh unique. I've thought about that a lot, actually. But it definitely comes from that general kind of, you know, Rust Belt type of thinking, you know. He was a son or grandson, I guess, of immigrants. Everyone in America is. But, you know, there are real... Every city is an immigrant city in America, which I love. And this, but you know, when you come from cities like Pittsburgh and Philly and New York, and it's really and even like Montreal, it's just thick with all kind of different types. And I affected, I guess it's a negative thing, but some of his manners and his voice and a little bit of that Illinois, not quite Chicago, the way he spoke, but that accent.
Now, there was resistance to allowing McDonald's into New York City for a while, but of course now they're all over the city, and McDonald's represents different things to different people, often has a kind of a negative image, and yet in the film, we feel that the original McDonald's people, the McDonald's brothers, were kind of idealistic.
I think they were very idealistic, and I think it's kind of in some ways, a beautiful origin story, both for the genius of Dick McDonald coming up with essentially creating fast food and all that is probably good and bad about that in today's world. But just the fact that they were about fresh produce, nothing frozen, everything locally grown, owner on site, quality control, these things that we admire today in the food industry.
Yeah, that's so interesting, actually. Every time I talk about this movie, I think about something new. I never even thought of that. That's so true. It kind of came full circle. They didn't even know it.
Kroc is called the founder. Obviously, the title refers to him. But of what? He didn't invent the McDonald's concept.
Well, it's, I think the title is intentionally misleading, or perhaps so, in that it goes to what is your personal definition of founder? Does it mean the person who invented it, the person who grew it? And this, I think Michael and I always intended for this to be kind of a Rorschach test for people. You bring in your expectations and your feelings and then watch the movie and come out differently.
Did Kroc's methods necessarily lead to what McDonald's has become, the largest purchaser of beef and potatoes in the world?
I would say, yeah. I mean, that you know, the founder, that he on one hand, he just, well, he took it when they didn't want to move on, and then he to his credit, he saw something big and they didn't, and then he definitely down the road got extremely unscrupulous in how he went about taking advantage of them. But my guess would be, and I don't really know this, that his justification for calling himself the founder, I'll bet you there was a big part of him that didn't have one doubt about it, because I think he probably thought, if you're saying you founded a hamburger stand and failed at a franchise and had a couple and you created this cool-looking building, yeah, I'll give you that. But what is it now? What is it? What did I do with it? I founded that.
I was interested in noticing the range of reactions. One critic called it an inspirational self-help manual.
That's fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah. That wasn't Donald Trump, was it?
Do you think of it as pro-business?
I think it examines business. I mean, I don't think we wanted to be pro or anti necessarily anything. And we're not hedging our bets here. I wanted people to take from it what they would take from it.
Well, do you think that Kroc, it kind of defines the American dream in a way?
Michael's got a good theory on this.
Well, you know, I suppose, yes, more he did in the movie more than a lot of people, because people, in my opinion, have misconstrued what I think, well, I know was the original American dream, because to me, I grew up thinking the American dream is you get an opportunity to have a job, you work for it, you try to get a job, then you work hard, and then you can afford a house and have some kids and hopefully put them into college, and you got a car that you can go to work and come back. I'm starting to sound like Ray. And then you got a car and come back. And that's pretty damn good, if you ask me. I think that's a pretty great thing. I think it's now become, if you're not a billionaire and you don't own an island and you're not constantly on one of these on a phone or someone showing what your wealth is.
He just held up his cell phone.
Yeah, you know, that you're showing off whatever you own or where you are or who you are, and you don't have a mansion and all that. Now that's become considered the American dream, and that was never really the American dream.
My guests are Michael Keaton, who stars as Ray Kroc in a new film called The Founder, and John Lee Hancock, who directed it. We will take a little break and come back with more in just a moment. We are back with John Lee Hancock, who's directed a new film called The Founder, and Michael Keaton, who stars in it as Ray Kroc. And correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but except for cutaways to food and a few other things, aren't you in almost every frame of this film?
I think I am, and I didn't even realize that until I think you may have told me. I think John told me or mentioned it somewhere. Yeah, I think so. You kind of don't think of those things in retrospect is when it hits you. Here's another, we were just telling some Kroc stories. I don't know if I told you this, because things keep, like an onion, keep getting peeled back, and you hear and learn. I took a break, and I was in New Zealand, and I was staying at this place, and I was leaving. And I was on my way out with my bags because I had to get in the car and drive to the next place I was fishing. And I had my bags, and there had been a guy there the whole week, interesting looking guy with his wife, and sitting at a separate table from us, and we never talked. And finally, that last day, as I'm leaving, he introduces himself, and I go, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you." And he asked me what I did, and I told him, and then he said, "Well, what are you doing?" And I told him, "Well, I'm in this movie," and tell him about the founder. And he says, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah." He said, "I handled Ray Kroc's prenup." I immediately set my bags down. I was already late for the airport. I thought, I got a gun in here. And I set my bags down. I said, "All right, we got to talk." I said, my first question was, "How long did that take?" You know what he said? "About 15 minutes. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
He said he knocked it. It was pretty clear what was going to happen and how it was going to go down.
Boom.
Yeah.
Now, that was the second wife.
Boom like
when
that.
We get, you tell that story here in the film. The film has the look and feel of the 50s, and it was hard for me to believe that it was shot in digital.
Yeah. That's my first time with digital. I'd shot every
really
other movie
like,
in film.
It really looks like a movie from the 50s.
Well, we beat up the lenses quite a lot. John Schwartzman, we used the lenses, actually the anamorphic lenses from The Rookie that we did together. So he did something called a detuning process to let them fall off a little bit on the edges to give it more the look of film.
But it doesn't look battered or scratched or anything.
No, it's not that. It's just not precise.
And yeah. Was there any difficulty in getting permission to use the name and the restaurant sites? Obviously, you're not telling a totally positive story. I would imagine that the McDonald's people, especially now where business is down for them, might be a little wary of something like this.
Well, it was my first question when I came in to interview for the job was, can we do this? And they said yes, and it came under the doctrine of fair use, since there's a historical element to the story, as long as we're precise and present it as it was, then we could use these things.
So you stuck pretty much to the real story?
Yeah.
Didn't take too many liberties?
No, actually, there aren't a lot of liberties taken. I mean, I would say that one would be where there's no evidence that Ray Kroc ever sat down with Joan Miller and played piano and sang. Uh-huh. However, we do know that he met her when she was playing piano at Raleigh Steakhouse. So it's something I can deal with.
And that was still a fun scene for you.
It really
humanizes
fun.
You at that moment.
Yeah, really, really... That and there are so many moments that are really fun to play in this movie.
And there are magical things that happen. For example, how did you manage to have all the kitchen staff move so smoothly?
Oh, that's an interesting one because I said...
This is in the original McDonald's when we understand the concept that the McDonald's brothers had.
Because along with the kitchen concept was the flow and how employees had to move without bumping into each other. There's one sequence where they're trying to figure it out on the tennis court. And the brothers, this is a true story, they went on their tennis court and would draw in chalk and have their employees move around pretending to make burgers, shakes, and fries until they bumped into each other. Then they would erase and redraw it. And so when we were thinking about that, I said I wanted to shoot it like a Busby Berkeley musical and have choreography. And they went, choreography? And I said, no, I want a choreographer and a click track, and we're going to be on beat with this. And so these great kids that we got to come in, and they worked for 3 weeks learning the dance of McDonald's.
And talking about musicals, in that scene where you sit down at the piano, you not only play the piano, but you sing.
Yeah, I don't really play the piano.
You fake it.
I learned something that, any primate could learn. And then, but I did sing. And I got a great compliment from my kid, who's a songwriter and a singer. And he said, no, he said, you pulled off. Remember he came to the studio today? I was really afraid that I would be way off key. And he said, no, you're all right.
No, you sound okay.
I actually, believe it or not, got an email about 2 days ago. I'm not going to tell you who it's from, asking me, is that really Michael singing? Because I want to go to him for a musical.
Oh, this is fabulous. Tony Bennett, that was, I think, who called.
TB, as I call him, yes.
Now, you put together a wonderful cast here. Laura Dern plays Ray's first wife, Ethel. You have Nick Offerman and John Carroll Lynch as Dick and Mac McDonald, mm-hmm. and they're totally convincing. Do they look anything like the real McDonald brothers?
They kind of do, although that's obviously not really important since nobody knows what the McDonald's brothers looks like. You can pull up and get a couple of images off the internet.
There must be
internet.
Some photographs.
There are a few photographs, but when I saw the pictures, I read the script first. When I saw the pictures, they reminded me exactly of what I felt when I read the script, that these were round-shouldered, all-American guys, salt-of-the-earth kind of guys. And so I just kept casting to that. And I, I've been a John Carroll Lynch fan for a long time and have fallen in love with Nick Offerman through Parks and Rec and other things. And so they just kind of fit together for me.
John Carroll Lynch is one of those guys. I always say that there are some actors. First of all, John always gets good cast. Like, look at his movies. He gets these great actors. But
Dern never let you down.
Ever.
Yeah, right. And B.J. Novak is fabulous as Harry Sonnenborn, but the like financial wizard who makes it all possible.
Laura and John, I always say, you can have the worst written scene, like historically bad, and if you're in trouble and go, this thing is not working, you call one of those or both of those actors, and somehow they just know how to make stuff work. They never fail. Those two actors, and there are a bunch of them around, but especially those two.
And not you, Michael?
Not me. Not me. I'll screw it up in a heartbeat.
How soon did you make The Founder after Spotlight?
Too soon. Because there was all the...
Because it's such different energy here.
Yeah. Totally different. Totally different person. you know, it wasn't just Spotlight. It was everything that came after, all the... you know, stuff that you have to do for award season and promotion, and then you kind of roll right into this. But there was enough time in there, and I just thought, you know, what do I really have down the road that's really going to get in my way? So it fit into my life, really, and I thought, you just need to do this. You know, you need to also be back in a situation where it's all on you. I like that, you know.
Because here, as John has said, you are carrying the film on your back, where in Spotlight, it was really all about an amazing ensemble.
Yes. Yep.
You did play a pivotal figure there, Walter Robinson.
Well, he was arguably
kind of the glue of the film.
Yeah. Right.
I understand that you, like many actors, don't normally like to watch yourself in the movies.
No.
Although that wasn't the case with Birdman.
No, Birdman I really enjoy watching because the film itself is so... it's odd because I really don't like a lot of attention, but it's so raw that what he wanted to do with that character that it's so exposed. Even I kind of look at it and think, wow, this is really, really raw and really, really, I'd say vulnerable. That sounds too precious. But the film itself is it's so unlike anything that I've ever seen made. And I'm not sure anyone will make it. It was so bold that just as a fan of movies, I had to watch it.
Well, John, would you ever do a film where the musical soundtrack was just a drummer?
I tell you what, I'll leave that to that. That was, I love that movie too, though.
He's a brilliant drummer.
How is it true that your work on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was a turning point for you?
No, that's untrue. It's not a turning point. It was a gig. And
how did you wind up on that?
Well, I was I dropped out of school for the second time to make a little dough in order to get back into school. But that time, I just never went back. I was getting more and more interested in writing, actually. And I did do a play or two in college. I was not good in either of them. And so I wanted to make a little dough to get back and pay my tuition. And I was doing a play at night and during the day. I got a job at the PBS station, the public broadcasting station, WQED, which was a really good station, and that's where Fred was. So you had to do everything. I worked down at the warehouse. You floor managed if you knew how. You threw lights up in little 16 millimeter documentaries. And one of the jobs was working on Fred's crew. And so then I would work behind. I would operate trolley, and I was Purple Panda for two episodes, $25 a shot. $50 total is what I mean for that gig.
Was he as nice as he came?
He was an exceptional person, and you just kept waiting, especially when you're that age, you know, because you're a smart ass already, and you just don't think any of this could possibly be real, and you just keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it just never dropped. He was that nice and that decent and actually quite funny.
And then you got into stand-up.
Yeah, and I'd already been really, really reading a lot of comedy, The Lampoon and everything, and I was, and I always did from the time I was a kid. My friends mostly were funny, and my family's funny, and that was a thing growing up, and so I always loved it. I always loved watching it in all forms, movies, but stand-up, and so I was starting to write, and you could perform. I didn't need to wait for a play or I couldn't be in a movie then or a television show, but, you know, I didn't have to wait for anything. And I loved it. It's terrifying. But when it's good and when you're on your own, there's just not one thing even close to it.
It is a form of acting, isn't it?
If you're the way I did
the same act every night.
Yes, the way I did it. I mean, there are certainly, you know, the Rodney Dangerfield and the, you know, the brilliant joke tellers. You know, the guys who just. I still admire the construction of an amazing joke. You know, I'm knocked out by, because it really is a construction. You know, I never really did that. It was performance for me, or observation and situational. And I guess I was doing little. It was a place for me to work out. You know, and I would be taking acting classes during the day.
So, do you think that doing that and figuring out what worked and what didn't has helped you as an actor?
I definitely do. You know, because you fail until you figure out. You know, the amount of time it takes you to put together 5 minutes or 7 minutes. I mean, for some people, it could be a year. I progress pretty quickly. It would do really well when I was out on the road or in clubs, but I wouldn't do necessarily very well. And on TV, had really limited what I could do, because it just took too long. It wasn't set up joke. But it definitely helped me. And, you know, Spacey did stand up for a while, Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. And he's a tremendous mimic. His impressions are fabulous. I could be observational, you know, helps with timing and understanding a scene, because basically I would write my own scenes, you know.
Didn't you start out practicing law?
I did. I guess that was the equivalent of my multi-mixer, lugging it around until I found something better.
And how did you wind up in film?
I had always been writing since I was a kid, actually, short fiction mostly, a little bit of poetry on occasion, and then had an English degree and didn't know what to do with it. Had been accepted to law school, so went. And then after you go to law school, you think, well, this is a lot of time and money put in. I should try to practice. And so I practiced for about 3 years, and during that time started writing screenplays and stage plays.
And you wrote Clint Eastwood's A Perfect World.
That was my first big movie, yeah.
Some people think it's, it's the best thing Kevin Costner ever did. It was just such a perfect role for him.
I think Kevin was amazing in the movie, yeah.
I remember seeing that script a long time ago and thinking, man, this is really good. This is really, really interesting. I, you know, obviously hadn't met him, but probably met him. I don't know. When did you write that?
1991.
Yeah. He also wrote plays and had a small.
Yeah, I had a small theater company, you know.
But you didn't write this script.
No, I didn't. It's. I wish I had. Robert Siegel did a beautiful job.
Is it possible to see a through line between The Blind Side and Saving Mr. Banks and now the Founder?
I don't necessarily think so, other than the fact that they're all kind of complicated, interesting characters. I'm drawn to that, not to any certain arena or themes, but just what's going to interest me for the next 2 years of my life, and is it worth waking up at 4 a.m. for?
What about developing a visual style? Some directors, you can almost spot their work no matter what they were filming. And then others, every film just seems like a new thing.
I like to try different things, but I have to say, for the most part, the stories I tell, I'm more interested in the characters than devices, in a way. And so I think that if you're looking at my camera move, I'm probably failing.
Well, the film looks pretty good, I have to tell you. Michael, when you play someone like Ray Kroc, does he stay with you after?
Only in this case, not a lot more. Maybe an attitude through the day, you know, just in kind of an energy or a level or a walk, or maybe without subconscious stuff, probably. Not aggressive necessarily, but maybe a little bit not shy, you know, through a couple months. But there's a part of me that can never let. There's a part of your brain, at least in my case. I think this may apply to other actors. I don't really know, but that you never quite. I'm always afraid to let something totally go for however months it takes, because I'm always afraid that it'll go away. Whatever it is that's in there is going to go. And I'm going to lose contact with what I'm supposed to be doing.
Maybe you'll need to do some reshoots.
Yeah, that's right. And there's that.
Well, there's a moment. There's a wonderful thing that happens when an actor like Michael is really, really talented, and you have lots of conversations, and then you start. Okay, we have to start shooting the movie now.
Yeah.
And when you kind of lock in, and it was very early on, I went, okay, there aren't any missteps anymore. I know you're continuing to modulate and do different things. But, man, it was just fascinating and great to watch.
Before you go, because we're pretty much out of time, do you think that this film would be seen differently if it had been made 5 years ago? How relevant is it to our current situation?
That's an interesting question. Probably differently, but I think also because it's an examination of capitalism and, like John keeps talking about, and I didn't really necessarily think about it that much, capitalism then and capitalism now and the free enterprise system and America then and America now. I think it would be really interesting regardless. That dial may be, I think probably that dial's been turned up.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on our show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
John Lee Hancock is the director of The Founder, and Michael Keaton stars as Ray Kroc in it. I suggest you go out and see it because it'll explain all sorts of things. And if you ever thought that McDonald's referred to the farmer in the nursery song, well, you'll learn that that wasn't the case.